All right, we'll say good morning. Today's daf is Tzadik Ches, but we begin from Tzadik Zayin Amud Beis. So two dots. Pshita. Pshita is actually an interesting case. Pshita niskavin lizrok shmona bizarak arba. We'll say if a person had kavana to throw an object 8 amas, but he only ended up throwing it 4. Don't he throw it at 4? So what happened? So the halach is his chayiv. Why? Harikas of shame mishimon. Because that's like writing shame. I had intention to write Shimon, and instead I only wrote shame. So because, again, the writing of those two letters, shame, is a significant and concrete act of writing in and of itself, even though my entire das did not materialize, I did something significant. So if my kavana was to throw 8, but I ended up throwing 4, then halacha l'maisam chayiv. So the Gemara says the following. So Niskavin lizrog arba v'zarek shmona mahu. What about the opposite case? What if my kavana was to go ahead and throw the object 4 amas, and what happens? And I ended up throwing it 8. Mahu. Mi arminan ha'apikli. Do we see on one hand, look, you did an act of otah. Right? On one hand, at the end of the day, you caused an object to move dalar amas. The fact that I had actually ended up moving 8 amas, okay, is irrelevant. O dilma, hecha deboilon halonach. Or, on the other hand, you could say, but at the end of the day, I will say, what? My das did not materialize, right? Where I wanted the object to land, didn't happen. V'lav haynu da'amrali ravina l'ravashi, v'amrali ba'omer kamakom shetir tzetanuach. But if you remember again the way we ended off the sugya yesterday, right, the case of where the person is standing in Rosh Hashanah and throws it into Rosh Hashanah, and the object travels Dalar Amas in Rosh Hashanah. So if remember again the way that Ravina ultimately explained that particular case is what's happening there. The person is staying, wherever the object lands is good for me. Which would seem to indicate that according to Ravina, according to the Maskan of the Gemara, if a person had specific intent for he wanted the object to end up, and the object what? Did not end up there, that technically speaking I would not be chayiv. So the Gemara says the following: Vidika Amrit Hari Chazav Shem Yishim. And I, but maybe you'll say the same thing like we said before. That why should Rabbi Samer now in this case over here? Remember, in case number one, which was the case where you had a mind to throw it 8 amis, and you only threw it 4. So the Gemara says that you're chayiv. Why? Because the Gemara compared it to a case of writing Shem Mishimo, Shin Mem of Shimo, which Halacha Mai says is something to back. So maybe you'll say the same thing over here. My kavana was to go out and throw it 4, and I ended up throwing 8. Maybe that's like shame and shimon, and that halacha l'maisa. I still did a unit of significant activity, to which the Gemara says, me dummy, can't compare the cases. You can't compare shame and shimon to a case of a person who wanted to throw 8 and only threw 4. Chasam, kamad looks kasiv shame, lo machtiv le shimon. In the case of shame and shimon, remember that in order for you to go ahead and what? In order for you to go ahead and write Shimon, you have to first write Shem. However, Hacha, Kama de lo Zarek Arba, lo Mizdakik le Timni. But over here, in order to throw it 4, you don't have to throw it 8. Right? Or in other words, what the Gemara is saying over here is that in the case of where I wanted to throw it 4, but I ended up throwing it 8, those two actions are not dependent on one another. You could throw 4 without throwing 8, and you could throw 8 without throwing 4. What does it mean to throw 8 without throwing 4? The object does not have to come to rest after 4 and then another significant act afterwards. The unit of 8 could be accomplished in one fell swoop, as opposed to Shem Yishimim, which can't be accomplished in one fell swoop. So the Gemara seems to indicate that although it's Pshita, that in the case of Niskavin Lizrok, Shmona, Bezarek, Arba, that she would be Chayiv, the opposite case might not be true. Tan Rabbanan. Hazorik Mirshus Harabin, Mirshus Harabin, Urshu Yachar Be'emtza. So if a person goes ahead and throws an object from Rosh Sarabim to Rosh Sarabim, and Rosh HaYochid is in the middle, okay? So the halacha is Dalet Amos Chayiv. If the object travels Dalet Amos in Rosh Sarabim, so the thrower is Chayiv, top of Tzadik Ches. Pachos Me'arba Amos Potter, but if the object travels less than Dalet Amos, you Potter. So the Gemara says, Mai Kamash Malon. So what's the Chiddush over here? Meaning, what is the Rais going to teach us? Two things. Hakamash Malon Rishuyos Mitzdarfos. Number one, what the Halacha is teaching us is that different domains combine. What does that mean? So we'll say, the novelty of this ruling over here is that Halacha Lamaisa is that Halacha Lamaisa, I'm sorry, if a person throws from one Rosh Hashanah to another Rosh Hashanah, and there was a Shliach in the middle, even if the object travels two Amos in the first Rosh Hashanah and two Amos in the second Rosh Hashanah, those two Amos in each different Rosh Hashanah combine to form a shear of Dalit Amos in Rosh Hashanah. Even though, again, those are two separate Rishuyos separated by a Rishus Hayochit. That's Chiddush number one. And number two, Udalo Amrinon, Kluta Kimashahuncha. And that we do not paskin, but this already we said yesterday, we don't paskin Kluta Kimashahuncha. We don't paskin that when an object travels through the airspace of a particular Rishus, it's as if it came to rest in that Rishus. So therefore, Aloch HaMais, in this case, we're throwing the object from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaRabim with Rishus HaYochid in the middle. We do not view that object as having come to rest in the Rishus HaYochid itself. Therefore, you will not be chayev for Hotzah, or for Achmasa, but you will be chayev for what? You will be chayev for Ha'abora, for causing an object to move Dalet Amos in Rishus HaRabim, even if the four Amos is made up of movements in two different Rishuyos HaRabim. So, if there's no hanocha. You have to come to rest.
No, let's see, there was hanocha.
He walked to and they're like two different mice. Correct. The difference of here is it's happening in one contiguous act. So we'll say, so what comes out of here, so we have two interesting pieces of halacha already. Number one, we have the case. We'll come back to the second case of the first part later on. But halacha mice we have over here that if your kavana was to throw eight and you threw four, then halacha mice yechayif. That's number one. Right? Number two, although we'll have to see what happens in the case of where you wanted to throw four, but you ended up throwing eight. That case seems still to be steeped in machlokas about what we do in that particular unit. Halach l'maisa, now we have that Rishuyos combined. Rishuyos combined. Rishuyos are mitznafos. And number three, we affirm the fact that we do not pass conclude to commission chadamya. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda. Amar Rav Abba. Amar Rav Ahuna. Amar Rav. A lot of people said, "Hamavir Dalit Amos Birshus Harabim Makura Potter." I'll say that again. It's a very interesting case. If one carries an object Dalit Amos in Rishus Harabim that has a roof, is this roofed? You're Potter. Why? Lefi she'eno dome l'digali hamidbar. Because such an act of otsa or such an act of avara is not comparable. Is not comparable to the what was done in the desert. Okay, look at Rashi just a moment. Rashi says, Makura, Mechusa. Mechusa. So again, I'm going to say this. So again, so if you have a situation of a Rosh Hashanah, now one thing we haven't done, because it's much more of an Erev in Sugya than it is a Shabbos Sugya, is we haven't discussed what the definition of Rosh Hashanah is, right? What halachically, but it's not really so important for our particular conversation now. But halacha l'maisa, you have a Rosh Hashanah, and that's roofed. That's roofed. So the Gemara wants to suggest, if you carry Dalet Amos in that, you're potter. Why? Because it doesn't resemble that which was done in the desert. In the desert, the Rosh Hashanah, which was the desert itself, was not roofed. So the Gemara says, Eni, is that true? Aye, what about the Ha'agolos? What about the wagons, right? The wagons that, remember, we spoke about the wagons already before. B'nai Levi, certain families of Levi, Merari, and others had wagons in which they went ahead and they carried the different utensils of the Beis HaMikdash, and not just the utensils, but actually not the utensils, but they carried the boards of the Beis HaMikdash, the curtains of the Beis HaMikdash was carried on the wagons. Now, what about the wagons? V'ha'agolos, the Mikoros Havya. Now, the wagons are considered to be roofed. Now, what does it mean the wagons are roofed? The wagons, a wagon has a, we'll call it the bed of the, right? The bed, is that the right word? Right? The bed of the wagon. Right? The cabin. Yeah, well, remember, these are not wagons like covered wagons, right? This is a flat-top wagon. A flat-top wagon. Now, see what the Gemara says in just a moment. The Gemara says, what about agolos tachtehen, underneath the wagons, beinehen, in between the wagons, sidehen, the sides of the wagons, are all Rosh Hashanah. Then I both say, for our purposes over here, the part that we're most focused on is tachtehen, is this idea of under the wagon. So the Gemara says that under the wagon is still considered to be Rosh Hashanah. Now, under the wagon, the truth is underneath a roof, is a roofed area. And yet, what do you see? That a roofed area is still considered to be a Rosh Hashanah. And I'm also going to take a look at Rashi for just a moment. This is very interesting. Vaha agolos de Mishkan. So the wagons that were used to transport the Mishkan, de Mikoros Havu, they're considered roof. Now, remember, this is very important. He says, Bekrushim hasidurin alehem. Now, remember, what was on the wagons? The wagons carried primarily the boards. The boards that comprised the walls of the Mishkan. Now, the way the boards were arranged, we'll get into this in a little bit in just a moment. Rechavan li'orech ha'agala, v'argan l'rachban arosh daf nosel, v'kasalka daitoch al pnei kol orech ha'agalos hayu misudaros. So we'll say, the way it worked is, the boards of the Mishkan were arranged in a, their length was according to the wagon's width. That perpendicular, right? So that if you can imagine, if the wagon is straight, so the rows of boards were arranged in a perpendicular fashion on top of the wagons. So not only do you have the bed of the wagon itself, that is a roof, but you also have, let's see differently, forget about the bed of the wagon for just a moment, the boards themselves, by definition, form a roof, and the Mishnah says, or the Braisa says, that underneath the wagons is still considered to be Rosh Sarabim. So you see from here that even a roof to Rosh Sarabim is Rosh Sarabim. So the Gemara says, finally, let's analyze this. So the Gemara says, Ki ka'amar Rav. So when does Rav say that the underneath the wagon is considered to be Rosh Sarabim? Ki ka'amar Rav, bidarasa. Now, what he's referring, darasa means, look at Rashi for just a moment, Berevach shebein shuros haseder shahayasoder keresh al keresh seder echad umanicho revach v'soder seder acher umanicho revach. So Gemara wants to now suggest, when does Rav say that underneath the roof, so to speak, of the wagons is considered to be Rosh Sarabim? That's talking about the spaces in between the boards. When they arrange, according to this approach, There were three piles of boards on each wagon. But the piles of boards were not flush against each other. There was space in between each pile. So the Gemara is suggesting, when does Rav say that the area underneath the Agala, underneath the boards is Rosh Sarabim? What is that referring to? That's referring to the airspace in between the boards. That the airspace in between the boards, that's not roof, that's considered to be Rosh Sarabim. But Enoch and Ami, underneath the boards themselves, would not be Rosh Sarabim. So the Gemara says, well, let's analyze this. Michti, okay, so let's do the math here. Orka da agola kamahavi. How long was the wagon? So Chamish Amin. So the length of the wagon was five amos, okay. Pusya de Keresh, the width of the boards, kamahavi, how much is that? I'm sorry. I'm so upalga. So the width of the board will be an am and a half. So we'll say again. So let's do this over here. So if you have a wagon that's five amos long, and you have each pile of boards is going to be an am and a half wide, and you have three piles of boards. So what do you have left? Kamamosiv la. I should read this first. Kamamosiv tlasa. How many piles of boards are you putting on the wagon? Three. Pasha palga va'amsa. So what do you have? You have an amma and a half, right? You have half a amma, right? So you have a half a amma left of space. So again, five ammos long, each grouping of boards is one and a half ammos wide. That leads you again to four and a half ammos. That means you have half an amma of space. Now again, let's be clear about something. That's half a amma of space to divide between what? In two different spaces, right? Because remember, you're spacing between pile one and two and between pile two and three. So half an amma, so a quarter of an amma in between each of those piles. So the Gemara says, Ki shadi le mar beni ubeni kilavu dami. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If all you're doing, remember, this goes back to yesterday's sukkah, less than three tefachim is lavud, is a space that is not likely to exist. I'm sorry? Oh, we're going to get to that. So now if we analyze this, remember, one amma is six tefachim. So now already, if you have a quarter amma space piles of boards, then halacha lemaisa, you already have less than three tefachim, and therefore by definition it's governed by lavud. If it's governed by lavud, then the area is considered to be closed. If that's the case, then Rav can't be telling us that halacha lemaisa, only the area between the boards is considered to be Rosh Sarabim, because the area between the boards is considered what? As if it doesn't exist. It's considered closed like the rest of the area that has the boards. So the Gemara says, no. Mi savris kirashim apusaihu havamarachlehu. You're assuming that, how did you go ahead and put the boards on the wagon? On their width, meaning on their flat side. Achudon manach lechu. How did they arrange the boards on the wagon? Standing up on the narrow side. On the narrow side. So the Gemara says, but one second. So still, let's do the math over here. Sof, sof. Sumcha de keresh kamahavi. Fine. So how thick is the board? How thick is the board if you stand it up on the narrow side? Amsa. Amsa. It would be an amma. An amma thick. Okay. So the Gemara says, amma thick. So the Gemara says, Hava Amsa, Kama Hava Mosif. How many groupings, how many units of boards would they put on each wagon? Arba, four, Pashala Amsa. So you still only have an Amma left of space. Kishodi Leimar Beni Ubeni Kilavadami. So also the Gemara is just saying over here is that Halacha Lemaisa, again, same thing. You're still going to end up with less than 3 tefachim of space in between each of these units, each of these piles of wood, and you're going to end up getting into lavud. So the Gemara says, "Hanicha lemanda amar krashim milamaton ovyon ama milamalon kolin vaholkin ad keetz b'shapir." So what's this? The Gemara says, I'll tell you where this could work. There is a fundamental dispute as to what the boards themselves actually looked like. What did the krashim look like? So according to the Mandama, who says that halacha l'maaseh, they were an amma thick at the base, but they generally tapered off as they got to the top. They got thinner and thinner until they tapered off to a point on the top. Then this makes sense. Then Rav's statement makes sense. Why? Because we'll say, if you can imagine this, if the boards were stacked on their sides, so what would end up happening? You would have actually some significant open space on the wagon towards the top of the boards. Then you have plenty of open space because, remember, the tips are very thin, and therefore, again, that's when Rav would be saying that, no, he's only referring to the fact that only the open area is considered the Rosh Sarabin. Ela l'man d'amr k'shem shalamatan ovyon amma, kach milamala ovyon amma, ma'ikla meimar. But according to the man d'amr, who says that, no, the same way that they were amma thick on the bottom, they were also an amma thick on top, then what is there to be said? Then Rabbi say again, we're going to be hard-pressed to say that Rav is referring to the open spaces between the boards, because we've shown already that no matter how you're arranging the boards, whether you're putting them on the flat side or on the narrow side, either way, halacha l'maisa, there is no significant open space. To which the Gemara says, Amrav Kahana, ba'atavoy. See, here's what's interesting. So, atavoy literally means clothespins. Look at Rashi. Atavoy, he says, Amrav Kahana, berevach shebein tzodei hakrashim shahatabos kavuos bohen. Kamarav, dahavi rishus harabin. Kilomar, I efshar lesadir ba arba sedarm kidika amrit. No, you see, you're not actually putting four piles of these boards on the wagon. Rather, what are you saying? Lifi shetabos kivun bikrashim kidichsiv ve'ez tabos seihem ta'as ezov shaya tochev habrichim tochon lifi shein gavos. So let me just say it's outside. What he's going to say over here is the following, that halacha lemaisa, the way they arranged the boards on the wagon was the following. They arranged it in two groups of two. That didn't make sense. In two groups, right? They put two piles of boards on the wagon, not three and not four. If that's the case, if you're only arranging it as two piles of boards, then the Gemara suggests you actually end up having an amma of space in between the two sections, in between the two piles. An amma of space already is a significant amount of space. And then, remember, just to keep the train of thought, we're trying to figure out the statement of Rav. Because Rav was the one who said, remember, let's just go back one more step. We made the statement that if you carry in a Rosh Sarabim Makura, if you carry in a covered Rosh Sarabim, you're Pater. You're Pater, why? Because it doesn't resemble that which was done in the desert. Aye, but what about the fact that they had covered Rosh Sarabim in the desert also, where? Underneath the wagons, right? If you went underneath the wagons, that was a covered area, and yet it was still considered Rosh Sarabim. So why wouldn't you be chayiv? So Rav wanted to suggest that the only, when it says that you're chayiv for the area, for some underneath the area of the wagons, that's only talking about the area where there's a space. The Gemara is trying to struggle to figure out where in the wagons or underneath the wagons would there be a significant amount of space. So the Gemara now has tried two different variations, one with the boards on their flat side, one with the boards on their narrow side. Either way, it doesn't work, because halacha lemaisa is not enough space. One possibility is, according to Madara, who holds that the boards tapered off on top, then you would have significant space at the edges. But now the Gemara gives a different suggestion. Even if you go according to Madara, who holds that the boards were one amma thick at the bottom, one amma thick at the top, so there's no tapering off, therefore there's no space, where would you find significant space on the wagons? The atavoy. So atavoy means, again, they're arranging it like a clothespin, but there is one and one, and therefore there's an amma of open space in the middle. That's when Rav says, in that open, underneath the wagon, in that sense, halacha lemaisa yuchayiv, because there's an actual open area. So the Gemara says, but one second. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Kana b'atavoy. Atavoy, hecha manachlu. Michael, this is your point. So now let's go back for a second, because why are we so fixated on the boards? You don't have to even get into the boards. What about the fact, agava, the agala, where are you putting the boards? Right? You're putting the boards on the bed of the wagon. Agala gufa on the korahavoy. Why are you worried about the boards? The wagon itself is a covered area, right? Meaning, who cares what the boards look like? At the end of the day, what is the Braisa saying? The area underneath the wagon is considered to be Rishta Rabin. The wagon itself is covered just because of the bed, to which the Gemara says, Amr, Shmuel, no, what's the case? B'yesedos. No, actually, the bed of the wagons of the Mishkan were not actual full beds. What were they? They were essentially, Yesedos literally means pegs. What it means is there were three different large slats of wood that comprised the bed. Because if you think about it, if you're carrying large pieces of wood, you don't need a whole complete flat bed for the base of it. Right? The only time you need a bed is if you're carrying smaller objects. If you're just transporting large beams of wood, all you need is some type of bed, some type of enclosure. Not enclosure, but some type of, I'm sorry?
Part of the frame
to keep it together, because you don't need it at all. Correct. So the way the Rashi understands it is they had three sections of wood that were there essentially to keep the frame of the wagon together. So because of that, the actual wagon itself does not cause a roof situation, and that's why the Gemara gets into the whole discussion about the arrangement of the boards. Look at Rashi. Amar Shmuel b'Yesedos lo hayu makuros milamata. The wagon itself was not really roofed on its bottom. Eli Yesedos Hayu. There were literally pegs or slats of wood. The Revach Beinehen Ke'en Osan Shalanu Ha'asuyos Lahavi Eitzin. So it's interesting. So Rashi says, if you want to know what we're talking about, just look at the wagons we use to transport wood. It's interesting. He says, okay, fine. So the Gemara goes weiter. Tan Rabbanan. So crush him. So Rabbi says, that pretty much ends that particular sugya. So again, we happen to paskin like this idea as well, that a roofed Rosh Sarabim is not considered to be a Rosh Sarabim. If you were to carry it through, at least would be Patr Midoraisa. Chai Midorabana Patr Midoraisa. But Aloch Lamaisa, the Gemara still tries to struggle to figure out what exactly went on in the Midbar. Tanu Rabbanan. Krashim Milamata Ovyon Amma, Milamala Kolin Behochen Adke Etzba. So now the Gemara is going to go back and discuss this idea of what the Krashim looked like. So the Krashim, the boards of the Mishkan, on the bottom were an amma thick, and on top, kolin v'holkin ad ke'etzba, tapered off, and became as thin as a finger, shene emar, because the pasuk says, yihiyu tamim al rosho. Yihiyu tamim al rosho. Fine. So, v'lahalonu omer, now what does that mean? Yihiyu tamim al rosho just seems to indicate what? That halacha l'maisa, they should be, tamim literally means like complete, they should be complete on their tip. And now, what is the Gemara? Ula halanu omer. Later on, it says, and this over here is quoting the pasuk from Yehoshua, tamu nichrusu. Tamu nichrusu. They were completely cut off. Dear Rabbi Yehuda. So, most likely, the Gemara is using the understanding that the word tamim doesn't just mean complete. The word tamim means ending off at a point, getting cut off, so to speak. So, therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this indicates the idea that the crushing of the Mishkan tapered off to one particular point. Look at Rashi. Ula halon hu omer tamu nechrosu. Ma tamu ane'emar lahalon. Loshon kiliya. Just like tamu that's mentioned in Sefer Yehoshua is a loshon of destruction, of ending off. Af tamu ha omer kan loshon kiliya. So too, again, the loshon that's said over here by the Mishkan is also a loshon of getting cut off. So the fact that the Gemara uses this lashon, the Torah uses this lashon, Rabbi Huda's understanding seems to mean the Torah wants the top of the keresh to taper off. Rabbi Nechemi says no. Kishim shemilamaton ovion amo, kach milamalon ovion amo. Rabbi Nechamia says no. The same way that halacha lemaisa, the bottom base of the keresh was an amo, so to the top was an amo as well. Shne emar yachdov, because the pasuk says over here. Now he's quoting the pasuk from Shmos. So the Torah says where is it? Yachdov. Let me read it to you inside. V'yu to'amim milamata v'yachdov yu tamim al rosho. So according to Rabbi Nechemiah, the word yachdov tells you that what yachdov means, what together. And therefore, the same way that the bottom is an amah thick, the top will be an amah thick as well. V'hok siv tamim. Aye, but what does Rabbi Nechemiah do with the fact that the Torah does use the word tamim? Right? What do you do with that? And remember, Rabbi Yehudi understood that the word tamim teaches you that it's supposed to taper off at a tip, at a point. So what does Rabbi Nechemiah do with that? Hahu de leisu shleimin velo leisu dinisra. So Tumim teaches you that when you fashion the boards, you have to fashion the boards out of whole pieces of wood, and you should not fashion the boards out of splinters. So meaning, also we see this concept in many areas of the Mishkan, that it has to be Tumim, not Tumim. It has to be Miksha. Right, miksha, whole one piece, right? You've seen this many of the kalim. Like when you make the menorah, amazing enough, you have to make it out of one piece, you have to hew it out of one piece of gold. You can't solder together multiple other pieces of gold. When you made these boards, so Rabbi Nechemiah wants to suggest that tamim means you have to make it out of one piece of wood, hew it out of one piece of wood, not out of multiple pieces of wood. Ve'idoch, nami haksiv yachdov. What does Rabbi Yehuda do with the word yachdov? So the Gemara says, ahahu, delo l'shlachafinhu mehadadi. Look at Rashi. Delo l'shlachafinhu mehadadi. Rashi says, echad lifnim ve'echad l'chutz. Ela moshiv hakrashim mechuvanim ze'etz al ze'eh. She'yamdu hakrashim mechuvanim ovya shel zu k'neged ovya shel zu. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, he uses this word yachdov to teach you that the boards have to be arranged in an exact order, meaning that they have to line up one with another. You can't have one leaning a little bit this way, one leaning a little bit that way. It has to be arranged perfectly. So the Gemara says the following. Bishlama leman d'amar kishem shemilamaton ovyon ama kach milamalon ovyon ama. So it makes sense. According to the man d'amar who says that the same way that the bottom of the board was an ama thick, so to the top of the board has to be an ama thick. Hainu d'chsiv, this is what the pasuk means when it says, uliyar kisei hamishkan yama ta'ase shisha krashim. Right, so the Torah says that when you go ahead and you arrange the boards of the Mishkan in this particular direction, you should make it six krashim, ushne krashim ta'ase l'mekutzos. And you should go ahead and make two krashim for the corners. Da'asi pusya dahani umimalile l'sumcha dahani. Because then essentially the width of this one could go ahead and fill in the thickness of the other one. So also what the Gemara is essentially saying is, it's easier to arrange the corners. It's easier to arrange the corners if halacha lemaisa you have it an amma thick on the bottom and an amma thick on top. Ela lemanda amar milamaton ovian amma milamala kalin vahoch in adketz. But according to Mandarmo, who holds that the bottom is one amma thick and the top ultimately ends off in a tapered thinness. High aisle the high nafik. Interestingly enough, the question is going to become, what's going to happen then when you get to the corners? What are you going to do with the corners? So the Gemara says, "Deshafi lahu ki turyan." This is actually interesting. So the Gemara says, you slant them like mountains. Look at Rashi. "Deshafi lahu," Rashi says, "Lerochav beis krashim mektoa, umekatsran lemala meirachban shlo yuhu bolten." Kiturim haharim halalo shem mishupan mi beis tzadin. So essentially, what you'll do is you'll slant them in from both corners. I'm sorry.
It's going to be like a pointed.
Correct. So according to this man, then we're going to see the fundamental machlokis is according to this approach. Then halacha lemaisa, essentially, the corners come in a little bit towards the point, as opposed to the other man who holds that it's an amma on top. It's really the corners are really right angles. All the Gemara is just pointing out is this is Machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Nechemiah about how the krashim were arranged, and the Gemara is just pointing out that the corners of the Mishkan looked different according to each of these opinions. According to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have again a pointed corner, almost like he says kipturion, like this, like a mountain has two sides that are slanted and come to an angle. So to the corners of the Mishkan would be slanted, coming up to an angle, to a pointed angle. And according to Rabbi Nechemya, halacha l'maaseh, the corners of the Mishkan were correct right angles. Okay. So the Gemara says the following: Va'abriyah chatichon. This is actually interesting. Habriyah Hatichon, one of the incredible miracles that happened in the Mishkan was this idea of the Briyah Hatichon, the middle bar. Now remember, the way the Krushin, we just saw before, according to Rabbi Nechemya, or according to Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of the Pasuk, Yachdov teaches us, when the Pasuk says Yachdov, the Krushin have to live together, that the Krushin have to be lined up, one with each other, perfectly. You can't have one slanting this way, one slanting that way. So how do they accomplish that? The Krushim had rings attached to each of them. What they did is they ran a metal bar through the rings, and that bar kept everything together. So listen to how amazing this is. The Gemara says, we'll see this later on, that bar was 70 amos long. That bar was 70 amos long. And what happened? Miraculously, they put it into the sockets, and what did it do? It wrapped around. Which, if you think about it, you know, whenever you're dealing with miraculous things, another miracle doesn't. So if you're already dealing with a Mishkan that has an H that comes down from the Ribono Shel Olam, and that's consuming, karbanos on the Mizbeach, a little bending metal is not, there's not even anything to write home about. But the idea is they had this Briyah HaTichon, which was this one metal pole that was inserted and went all the way around the Mishkan. So the Gemara says, HaBriyah HaTichon B'soch HaKrashim. Now the Gemara says this middle pole that was inserted into the Krashim, that was inserted into the poles. So the Gemara says, B'neis Haya Omeid, which literally stood through a miracle. Now look at Rashi, B'neis Haya Omeid. Sha'achar HaKrashim Kula Nisunim Ba'adonim. Now remember again, just one more piece that's important to highlight over here is the Krashim themselves, the wood didn't stand on the ground. The wood was inserted into silver sockets. Each keresh, each board, had two protrusions, and those protrusions fit into a silver socket. So Rashi points out over here that after the wood was put into the silver sockets, then what happened? So here Rashi points out, they would go ahead and they would insert this pole, and this pole would be long enough to cover the entire area of the Mishkan, but it was straight. And miraculously, it would bend around the walls of the Mishkan. So the Gemara says, "Vayter." Ves haMishkan ta'ase eser yirios. Now the Mishkan itself, the Mishkan was made for the Mishkan. You would make panels made up, or I should say, coverings made up of 10 panels. Orech hayiriyah ha'achos shmona ve'esrim amo. So the length of one panel would be 28 amos. So now I will say the Gemara now wants to figure out how exactly it was when you put these panels, these coverings, over the top of the Mishkan. So how exactly did they look on the body of the Mishkan? So the Gemara says the following. So we'll just do a little bit of the math over here. So the Gemara says, So the simple length of one of the curtains was 28 amos. So one of the panels was 28 amos. Shadi orchayhu lepusya de Mishkan. So go ahead and essentially line up the length of the curtain according to the width of the Mishkan. Kamahavya, how much space does that take? Esrin v'timni, that's 28 amos right there. Dal eser le'igra, take away 8 for the space of the roof. Pashat lahu tes lahai gisa, v'tes lahai gisa, that'll leave you an overhang of 9 amos on this side, and 9 amos on the other side. Rabbi Yehuda, migla amad da'adonim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it turns out that then what do you have? You have so the curtain essentially hung down all the way until it exposed the last, essentially once it's hanging over the side, if it's hanging down 9 amos, that leaves 1 amma of space. What's exposed in that 1 amma of space is the sockets. Now the Rabbi Nechemya, migla amma de krushim. According to Rabbi Nechemya, not only was there an amma of the sockets exposed, but what? There was an additional amma of the actual keresh. Why that distinction of both? That goes back to what we said before. Because according to Rabbi Nechemya, remember, let's work backwards. According to Rabbi Yehuda, because the boards of the Mishkan are an amma thick on top, that means there's an extra amma of covering that's being taken up on the roof. According to Rabbi Nechemya, remember, what are the tips, what are the tops of the boards look like? they're tapered. So because of that, you gain an extra amma in the overhang. So the Gemara says the following. So the Gemara says, Migla amma dekrashim. Shadi pusaihu la'arka de mishkan. Kamahavya. So if you arrange again, it's width according to the length of the mishkan, then what do you have? Kamahavya. Arbo'in, 40 amos. Dal tzlasin le'igra. Take away 30 amos that would be for the actual roof, for the length of the roof. Pashaluhu yud. You're left with 10. You left with 10 amos. Rabbi Yehuda, nechasya amada adon. According to Rabbi Yehuda, then it would even cover the bottom, the actual, all the way to the bottom, even the adonim themselves. Rabbi Nechemya, migla amada adon. According to Rabbi Nechemya, again, remember, we'll say, same machlokes. According to Rabbi Nechemya, you're always going to have that extra amo. So it would reveal the amo of the adonim. Va'asisa yurios izin la'ohel. You will make these yurios, you will make these curtains. Curtains is not really the right word, but we'll translate it as curtains. But you're going to make these coverings that were made of goat hair for the Mishkan. Orech hayiriya ha'achos shloshim ba'ama. So the length of one of the panels was 30 amos. Shadi orchaihu lepusya de Mishkan. So go ahead and arrange the length of it, the length of the curtain, according to the width of the Mishkan. Kamahavya, so how much would that be? Tlasin, 30 amos. Dal esra le'igra, take away 10, which is the size, the width of the roof, of the we'll call it the roof of the Mishkan. Pashaluhu esra la'hayisa. Esra la'hayisa, that leaves you with an overhang of 10 amos on each side. Rabbi Yehuda, michsa amadadarim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that therefore covers the Mishkan all the way to the bottom, including the adarim. Rabbi Nechemya, migla amadadarim. According to Rabbi Nechemya, no, you actually have revealed the am of the adarim. Fine. Tanya nami hachi a brisa that supports this as well. V'ha'ama mizeh v'ha'ama mizeh ba'odef. Right, the pasuk says over here that you have an ama on this side and an ama on that side in extra. Lechasos ama shel adonim divrei Rabbi Yehuda. In order to cover the extra ama, even of the adonim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemya omer lechasos ama shel krashim. Fine. Shadi pusaihu la'arkei d'mishkan. So now again, dealing with the covering of the goat hair. So if you arrange the covering of the goat hair, if you arrange the width of it according to the length of the mishkan, kamahavi, how much would that be? Mem. That's 40 amos. Mem, right, mem. I'm sorry. What's the place here? Kamahavi, mem ba'arba. Fine. Dal tlosin le'igra. Take away 30 for the roof. Pashaluhu arbasori. You're left with 14. Dal tarti lekaflo. Go ahead and take away 2 for the overhang over the front end of the Mishkan. Dichsev vekafalta es hayiria. Hashishis amul panei ohel. Pashaluhu tarti sri. You're left with 12. Bishlam of the Rabbi Yehuda. This makes sense according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says what? Dichsev chatzi hayiria haodef es tisrach. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, he holds that what? That half of the urea, that's ultimately tisrach, that's extra tisrach, will be draped. El Rabbi Nechemya, my tisrach. But according to Rabbi Nechemya, what is it that's draped? Tisrach mechaverosel. It will be longer than the other panels. Tana de Rabbi Yishmal, leman mishkan dome. To what could the mishkan be compared? Listen to how beautiful this is. Li'isha shemehaleches bishuk v'shipuleha mahalchin achareha. To what can the Mishkan be compared? It can be compared to a woman who's walking through the shuk and her shipuleha. Shipuleha, Rashi points out over here, is shule bigadeha ka chayse yuriya shal acharav nigreres varas. Just like a woman of nobility, when she would walk in the marketplace, her dress would trail behind her. We only see this like by a kala. Her dress trails behind her. So too, how did the Mishkan look? Rabbi, according to what we just saw, that on the back of the Mishkan, although on the sides of the Mishkan, what we see is the curtains don't touch the ground, right? Or at least some of the curtains don't touch the ground. How high off they are, we'll see as a machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Nechemya. But on the back, one thing is clear, which is what? It touches the ground and it trails behind, almost to create this image of the very dignified woman who walks and her dress trails behind. I suppose we'll stop over here for today.